Plarenbach.
1987, you might
1987. Thank you, Gay. Well, let's begin by looking at these.
Okay, I'll explain first what the photograph album is and why I have it. This actually is the album of my brother David. And he was killed during World War II in a plane crash. He was an aviation cadet. And after he died, my mother put together this album with pictures mainly of him. And by the time she finished that, she thought, wouldn't it be nice if she pawed through all the other old snapshots and put together one for each of us, which she did. Mine is buried someplace in the basement, but I'm in enough of these so that it will refresh my my memory. I thought that was such a good idea that I started doing it with my kids. And as soon as I had two and then three, I would have triplicates made of any photograph and started books for all of them. By the time they moved out, I told them they were on their own.
And it was up to them to continue
right.
them, huh? That's a wonderful...
Yeah, what I'm trying to do. Well, they're all labeled. Thank goodness. This is my mother's family, all except her youngest sister. So the two-year-old is my mother.
Where was your mother born? Wisconsin?
Yes, in Sparta, same town I was born in. And her brother and two older sisters.
That's wonderful.
It's and a good thing she wrote that. When my mother, well, maybe a few years before she died, and I was visiting in Sparta, we hauled out reams of old photographs from a closet, and I had her dictate to me who was in those pictures so that I have some better.
Yeah, pretty important. Did she live in Wisconsin her whole life?
Yes. Practically.
Uh-huh.
During World War I, my dad was stationed in Little Rock, Arkansas. And that, I thought my mother had never learned how to drive, but she told me that my mother and dad were married in Sparta, but then they lived in Kendall, which is a little town not far from there, where my father was a preacher and my mother had been a country school teacher. And when he was... And my oldest brother, Bob, was born in Kendall. And pregnant with her second child, my mother drove with this four-year-old and a growing fetus by her, otherwise by herself, from Kendall, Wisconsin to Little Rock, Arkansas, over mountains and other things. She said by the time she got there, that ended her driving. She got there safely, but she was so miserable. On the whole trip that she never drove again.
Interesting.
And they actually lived in Little Rock College, which is a Catholic college run by priests. So my mother was the only female around there, and they maintained warm friendships with a number of those priests for the rest of their days.
And was your mother college educated?
No. She started teaching country school in a really rural one-room school in a community known as Summit, which is about, I suppose, 25 miles from Sparta. Much of Laura Ingalls Wilder books, I think one of the reasons my mother loved those so much and loved reading them to all her grandchildren was that it reminded her of her own experience in those days. And when we move into this photo album, a few pages, we'll see, I think, some pictures of perhaps all of us, but certainly of David and me, spending time at this farm where my mother roomed. She was paid $28 a month for teaching school, and I think room and board was thrown in addition to the cash income. But we used to visit that farm and just loved it. Sometimes we would stay overnight and sleep in the barn, in the hayloft, just for fun.
Were the original people still there?
Yeah, the whole family.
Did she ever talk about how she felt about the experience, about the payment? Did she feel she was fairly paid and what the work was like?
Well, She talked a lot about what it was like to teach, and she had such a range of ages and abilities. In fact, during World War II, in Sparta, which is where I was born and where my parents did live, they moved there in 1920, shortly before I was born, and then lived in Sparta the rest of their days. And Camp McCoy, now known as Fort McCoy, is located just a few miles out of Sparta. Mm. So that during World War II, there was an enormous inundation of military. In fact, they used to come there every summer from ROTC and CMTC. And my mother was a gray lady. A gray lady during World War II. You're too young to know what that
is. I don't know what that is.
Well,
I should probably.
Volunteer women who worked in hospitals and other military. I don't know that the ones who worked in canteens were ever called gray ladies, but they had uniforms that reflected that. So, in any case, well, I guess she was at a USO when this incident occurred. A couple of soldiers were quite drunk, and there was one of them was wielding a knife, and there were fisticuffs or whatever, and the local constabulary had their hands a little too full, and all of a sudden my mother looked and recognized one of these men as having been a first grader in her summit school, and she went over and called him by name, and he said, "Oh, Miss Hubble," and he sobered up at once, and he apologized, and that was the end of his misbehavior. So she must have had an influence on her students. My mother did have one summer here at the university. Must have been before she was married. She stayed in Chadbourne Hall, which there was an old Chadbourne Hall where the high rise is now.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently that was a very exciting and wonderful experience. My dad had he has a bachelor's and a master's degree from the University of Wisconsin, and a law degree from Georgetown Law School. Shall we wait for the airplane?
Sure. Okay.
Oh, I guess I mentioned that my dad had
a bachelor's and a master's and a law degree.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And an honorary doctorate from Little Rock College.
Wow.
And I suppose in each case, their encouragement to all four of us to have as much schooling as possible came out of their own experience. My mother was a great reader. She loved to write. She didn't have an awful lot of opportunities to write, but she would write, for example, not only her own paper every year for Literary Club and papers for other organizations she belonged to, but frequently would ghostwrite my father's paper for Literary Club, which he would then stand up and read. But she would have the fun of doing the research and writing it. I think the fact that she didn't have an opportunity to go to school as long as she would have liked made her value that experience.
Mm-hmm.
So that both my parents, but particularly my father, used to line us all up. Three of us were in college all the time that I was an undergraduate, which was a little bit of a strain on a country preacher and a country lawyer, financial strain, that is. And in fact, he borrowed money from the bank to pay our tuition, which was then $27.50 a semester.
Oh my, what an example of inflation.
That's right. In fact, there was a real student protest during one of my early years here when the Regents threatened to increase the tuition up to $32 a semester. They were successful, of course, in doing it. But anyway, my dad always said, "I will see you through to a master's degree, and after that, you're on your own." And he just assumed there would be an after that, and there was in each case.
For all of you.
My brother Gordon, who was just older than I am, and I got our master's degrees at the same time here, in the same ceremony. He in economics and I in political science. And then after the war, he got a law degree. And I got my PhD. And my brother Bob, who was in dramatics and speech, did everything but thesis for his PhD from the University of Iowa. And by that time was kind of fed up Mm-hmm. My husband did exactly the same thing at exactly the same age at Columbia. He had everything but thesis.
That's a frightening bit of information.
Well, yes.
Yeah. How did... I mean, did you always know then, from the time that you were a young girl, that you would go to college? Was it kind of a given in your reality?
Yes, I don't think we ever discussed it. The only question was where we would go to school.
I see.
And my brothers both had a couple of years at La Crosse, which was a state college at the time, but I didn't want to go there. And I remember conversation about Lawrence College, which is now Lawrence University in Appleton.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even want to go and look at it. I don't have no idea why I just assumed that the university in Madison was where I wanted to go to school.
Did you have any reasons, just that it was the biggest school? Or?
I don't know that I ever even thought through. I must have had some semi-conscious reasons.
Uh-huh.
I had visited a lot in Madison. I had friends here with whom I would come and spend a week. Our family came here frequently from the time I was very, very young. We'd come just for the day and go to the zoo and look at the Capitol. And my father would show us a lot of his old haunts. He was born in Madison and went to high school here. And in fact, worked his way through the university by preaching in two little communities near here, Ironton and Cazenovia. And he would hire a rig on Saturday and drive to these places, conduct two services on Sunday, and then drive back. And apparently it was paid enough to eke out. But when we would come to Madison as kids, he would point out where he used to have play hare and hound chases out. And of course, the way in which the city had expanded since his day, and of course it's even more so in the 27 years that we've lived here, but that was always kind of interesting. In fact, I was thinking a little while ago of the kind of sense of history that particularly my father, at least I identify it in my memory, had not only on trips that we would take, which I can get to in a minute, but in our little community of Sparta, which was just shortly over 3,000 population when I was in school there. Now, of course, it's a metropolis of some 6,000 or 7,000. But my dad would frequently, if we were in the car going downtown, he would stop at the blacksmith shop or take us around by the, what was called just the square, I think. Can't remember. Where there was a watering trough and where the farmers would hitch up their wagons when they came in on Saturday. And he also took us to a flour mill that we had, a little creek that runs through town called Beaver Creek, only it's called Beaver Creek, and to see the feed mill and point out that these things wouldn't last much longer and we should really become acquainted with them and know that they were, you know, on their way out. And so this was similar to our visits to Madison or wherever we went. He would point out changes, that things that had been different when he was young and that were going to be different pretty soon. On some of these trips, we did have some awfully nice vacation trips, again, when I was a kid. One summer when I think I was about 12, we had an Eastern trip for 6 weeks or so. And we went by train to, and you'll see snapshots in there of Plymouth Rock and, the Gettysburg battlefield. And we went to Frederick, Maryland, because our name was Frederick. And one of my brothers purloined a, you know, what today would look like a bumper sticker marking Frederick, Maryland. Saw where the witches of Salem were persecuted. And wherever we went, my mother would have tried to fill us in on some historic information. And my dad would walk us through. And I remember my mother loved to tell the story of a having to intercede in a what turned out to be a very unpleasant, I don't know if it was real fisticuffs, but my brother, Gordon, and that he would have been 14, and his friend from across the street, Doug Burnett, they had been absolutely fast bosom friends since they started kindergarten together, never had unhappiness between them, and they were actually wrestling and fighting. My mother went out to stop it and to find out what in the world was going on. And Doug said, well, Gandhi says that his dad was in the Battle of Gettysburg, and I know he was. And then Gandhi said he was too, and I saw exactly where. And so I'm sure that my dad had pointed out where Wisconsin Civil War Union soldiers had participated and made it so real that my brother was absolutely sure he had to have been there.
Mm-hmm. So you really grew up with a sense of history.
Yes, without really knowing that we did.
Yeah.
Then earlier, when I was either 5 or 6, we had had a West Coast trip. And we had stopped to see friends in Denver and other places, and then took the train to Seattle, where we got on a boat and went down to San Francisco by boat. And my mother used to tell me that I was absolutely certain we couldn't possibly sleep on a ship or a boat. The only boat of my life experience was a little rowboat on our lake at home, and I didn't see how that many people were going to be comfortable on it. And then we had time in California and Yellowstone Park and all of the traditional things. And I guess it was unusual. There were not a lot of families in our community who had the opportunity to do things like that.
Mm-hmm.
We did go almost every summer for a few days in Chicago. For quite a few, we went to a World's Fair. But also my dad would time these visits to Chicago to coincide with baseball games. He was a Chicago Cub fan, and he would try to find a time when there were double hitters so he would get his money's worth. And I would be scared for quite a number of visits. The idea of Chicago was just nothing but gangsters and shootings, and I was very leery about going.
How old were you when you first recall a trip to Chicago?
Oh, I don't know, 8 or 10, I suppose.
Do you have memories of what it was like?
Yes, I do. My dad would drive to the a garage in Evanston, where he had prearranged the opportunity to park the car, because he didn't want to drive in a great big city. He wasn't afraid of the bandits, but he was afraid of the traffic. In fact, he was a terrible driver. I always maintained that he never really made the transition from the horse and buggy. He thought the car could take care of itself. When he used to drive from La Crosse to Sparta, which is about 30 miles, he had an office in La Crosse for another job that he had, state parole and probation officer. And when anybody in Sparta knew that he was in La Crosse for the day, they would try to head home earlier than they knew he generally did, so they wouldn't get behind him on the highway, because he literally was stopped, he says, at least half a dozen times when there'd be a new traffic cop who didn't know, didn't recognize his car, thinking there was a drunk driver, because he would watch the scenery and forget to stay in his lane. In any case, when we went to Chicago, he would then park in Evanston, which was, I'm sure, a blessing for the entire metropolitan area. And then we took the elevated into town, into the loop.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad and the three boys stayed at the YMCA, and my mother and I stayed at the YWCA, because those were the cheapest places in town. And I guess my mother got dragged to the baseball games, although after we'd done this a few years, she would even beg off from going to the ball games. I got a little bored before the second game was over, especially if it lasted kind of late. But also, sometimes my mother and I would, because we weren't staying with the men, would get up early. I can remember one time we went to a morning matinee. We thought that would be so risque to go to a movie in daytime. Oh, I used to go Saturday afternoons to see the Westerns in Sparta, but to go in the morning. And Then we walked in, the first time we did this, maybe we only did it once, I can't remember. My mother said, isn't it strange that all these men are sitting around in the theater? Why aren't they working? Two men at a movie in the morning. Of course, then when the gals began walking out on the ramp and shedding their garments in between, she began to realize why there were so many men in the audience.
So it was a traditional matinee, but during intermission, there was a burlesque show?
Yeah. Yes, and it was in the morning. And so I have thought many times that my mother took me to my first, if not only, striptease. I thought for the wife of a Methodist minister, that was going some.
That's wonderful.
I might tell you what the rest of my father's occupations were.
Yeah, that would be good.
I don't know which was his primary identification, but he was a country minister, mm-hmm. country preacher, who had as many as 8 parishes at one time, which he would serve. 4 services every Sunday, 1 at 9 in Leon, 1 at 11 at Big Creek. In the afternoon, it would vary from Angelo to Cataract. He would alternate afternoon services around. And then Sunday evening was always Rockland, which is a little town about 6 or 7 miles away. Then he would have some Wednesday night services, and some just maybe once a month in some remote, more remote places. Mm-hmm. But as many as 8 parishes going at once. He would meet people on, he was never great at remembering names and faces. Well, he would remember the individual, but forget where they lived.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he would meet people on the street, and they'd say, now, when are we having service again? If he couldn't remember where they lived, he would have to say, now, let's see, when did we have it the last time? And that would then identify it for him so that he could. Well, that was, and mostly his preaching was missionary work.
Mm-hmm.
He really wasn't paid enough. They'd give him the collection.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be about it. And it rarely covered gas and oil, so that it really was no source of income.
Mm-hmm.
He did have an enormous number of weddings, funerals, baptisms, and such, simply because he was known throughout several counties and in many, many rural communities. He and my mother used to be invited to country schools back in those days, even when I was a kid. I say even as though it were only yesterday, there were still one-room schools. The consolidation movement hadn't.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it was a point of great discussion in our household. Both my parents thought that what would be gained in the education of the students would be a loss to the sense of community and the doing things together.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I used to sometimes tag along when they would be invited to judge the forensics contest or give the graduation address at a 8th grade event, and it was always kind of fun. And
mm-hmm.
again, another of the historic
mm-hmm.
Things. Then my dad was a lawyer. Again, I have to call him a country lawyer. He called himself that. Mostly pro bono work. Not by design, but because he always maintained that when a very poor client would go to one of the other attorneys in the community, they could see that this was a non-paying customer, so they would be terribly busy, and then say, but I think Frederick might have time. Why don't you go and see him?
Hmm.
And I don't think he ever turned down anybody, certainly not because they didn't have money. Then he was a state humane officer. I don't think we don't have such a one anymore. And in that capacity, it was his job to investigate complaints of people who were being unkind to animals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so he would, and I remember many times going with him, he would sometimes work these calls on a farm where there'd been a complaint, in with other trips that he had to take, or when we'd go on fishing trips,
mm-hmm.
which was my mother's idea of a real vacation. She would pack up the four kids and my dad for a week, and she'd stay home. And that was her idea.
Oh, of course.
And we loved going with my dad because he never paid any attention to whether we were clean or not. And the only time we would bathe would be when we'd go swimming in a river or wherever we happened to be. Mother said we'd bring home the luggage with everything neatly folded, just exactly the way she'd packed it. We hadn't even fished up pajamas or toothbrush or anything.
Who did the cooking when you would go camping?
Well, usually the county sheriff or his wife. My father was a past master at getting freebies, and so he would stop in the jail and visit the and often had business with either parole or probation or some, I don't know, or he would manufacture some business, I guess, and then he'd ask where there's a good place to eat and or to stay overnight. Many of the night we slept in jails and in actual jail cells, and frequently the wife of the sheriff or the wife of the jailer would notice finally that one of us was a girl. Would say, "Oh, I don't think a little girl should sleep here." I would be so horrified at being separated from the rest of the tribe that I, did my best to insist that I would stay there.
Were you mostly successful?
Mm-hmm. I was. Mm-hmm. So we often ate there, but otherwise we ate inexpensive hamburgers and chocolate malts.
I see. So you didn't bring food with
you
or that kind of thing?
No.
Yeah.
And I think we would have starved. My dad, after my mother died, and she was 74, my dad stayed in the house for several years, and he did manage to fry an egg and do a few simple things, but he never did really learn how to prepare a meal.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to think he might suffer from botulism because he didn't wash the things, so he figured he was just going to use it over again.
Mm-hmm.
This seemed unnecessary.
Everything you've said about your dad, I see that humanitarian thread all the way through.
That's right. And in fact, he had his office at home. I mentioned his office over in La Crosse when he was during the period when he was a state parole and probation officer, and that was actually his main source of income and his primary job. These other things he kind of sandwiched in, although they certainly took a great deal of time. Because his office was at home, we all learned to be receptionists and message takers from, I suppose, the time we could walk and talk.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a steady stream then of people coming into our house who were either prisoners or trying to escape going to jail, or bereaved people, and a lot of poor folks.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't all poor, but so we were exposed to this as normal. These were not exceptions. These were kind of the way people were and the kinds of problems people had to live with. And then this would be the conversation at our meals. My father was also a very political person. He had been in our state legislature before he was married, elected from Kendall. I'm hesitant to say from the same district that our current governor served from in the legislature, but in a different generation, of course. And he ran for Congress, for United States Congress, when I was quite young, maybe 1924 or 26. He was not successful in his campaign. It's a wonder to me that he even, when I see snapshots now of my dad going out by himself, and maybe the kids would be along, putting posters up on rural post, and had one little leaflet or something. But compared with the way winning campaign has to be run.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty slender.
What was your mother's role vis-a-vis all of this, then, while all of this is going on?
Well, in the first place, she had to tolerate having my father's office in our house. They worked out an accommodation My father would stay up, not half the night, all. He would often work at his desk, and he typed his own correspondence until 3 and 4 in the morning. My mother got up at 6 every morning, in fact, sometimes earlier than that, and would do her domestic chore. Well, she got up early enough because she liked to write in her diary every morning before things got too thick. But then to have breakfast ready for 4 kids and herself, and then to do the housework, which we had a fairly large house, and she worked just in ways that I never have had to work, just to maintain the household. She did have some help, a cleaning lady, and then for some years we had what we called a schoolgirl, a rural, you know, throughout their whole 4 years, and then really wanted to stay on longer. Mm. They thought they were learning a lot, and were always treated not like hired help, but very nicely. And my mother kept a very special eye on their wardrobes and made sure that they had proper things. Then they would go home on Friday after school and come back either Sunday night or Monday morning. Mm-hmm. And it did help her a lot to have somebody do the dishes, and or when we were very little, to keep an eye on us when she went out. Now, you ask what her role was. My mother always did my dad's expense accounts for his state parole and probation, mm-hmm. and kind of kept track of other reports that were due. She went with him to the Methodist conference every year, and not really out of a sense of duty. She didn't function like the typical minister's wife. In the first place, she did a lot of her own things. She liked to play cards, and in those days it was Fair Bolton in the mm-hmm. Methodist Church, and she didn't care what the rules were. She was a religious person and a spiritual kind of person. Mm-hmm. She went every Sunday night to the Rockland Church with my dad. In fact, it took me many years to realize why I would be kind of down on Sunday nights, lonely. And I finally traced, no matter where I lived or what I was doing, mm-hmm. I finally kind of traced it back to that Sunday night service when both my mother and dad would be away.
And you weren't used to that kind of absence in the house.
I should have been used to it. It happened every Sunday, but I didn't like it, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when I had a family of my own, I made Sunday nights very, very special. I never absented myself on Sunday night. I figured people were getting ready to start school on Monday morning. So I always tried to plan something kind of special. Everybody would bathe and shampoo and clean pajamas, and then we'd come downstairs, and if it was fireplace weather, we would read in front of the fire or do something to make it a nice, pleasant transition into Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Or so, whatever.
And did that change your attitude about
mm-hmm.
Sunday nights, too?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably why I did it.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure. I'm sure.
But, and my mother would have to meet people at the door. We had lots of marriages in our living room, so she'd have to, and baptisms, and she would witness legal papers, and so she participated really in all of those things that my father did.
Mm-hmm.
But refused to teach Sunday school. I shouldn't say refused. She did have a high school Sunday school class in the local congregational church, but not in any of my dad. I think she was very wise. I mean, he had ultimately a total of 12, only 8 at a time, but 12 different parishes. And if she had offered to do something in one of them, and then the other 11 would nag at her, that could be her life. And she was interested in a lot of other things. She was a very community-minded person. Our Band Mothers Association was very big in the early days, would have fundraising events like pancake suppers mm-hmm. to raise money to buy uniforms and instruments for the band and orchestra. And there never seemed to be tax dollars for those things. Mm-hmm. And the school did provide. We had a very good high school and a good school system. My mother was elected to the school board in a political election in the early 20s, very soon after women were granted the right to vote. And she was the only woman for years on the school board. I used to be teased by my friends in school who said the reason I was on the high honor roll all the time was because my mother was on the school board. And I don't think there was a great deal of truth to that, but my dad would get so excited on election night to, he would phone down to the city-county building every half hour to see if the what the returns looked like. And my mother was very calm. I don't know if she felt assured she'd be reelected, which she always was, or whether it just, well, she was a calm person, and both of them were very calm. I commented to my son the other day, in what connection, I can't remember. I said, I don't think that my mother or father ever raised their voice to any of us. And I don't believe they ever did. They never had to. In the first place, they didn't go around issuing commands. And then they had other ways of, my mother was a, really would make Tom Sawyer look like a piker. She had an arrangement. In our family, three of us had blue eyes and three of us had brown eyes. And of the kids, we were two and two. So she found that a good way to divide, to create teams as good as any other. Of course, as it also turned out, I'm one of the blue-eyed, and my blue-eyed brother, Gordon, was less interested in making his bed and picking up his clothes than the other boys were. And so my mother knew that I would pick up any slack. So when she paired us off this way, she perhaps knew more about us than the color of our eyes. In any case, she had a little chart in the kitchen, and we would get, there was a whole series of things that we were expected to do, and make our own bed and pick up, you know, leave no clothes lying around, and be down to breakfast by a certain time, and then practice. I don't know how she stood it. My brother Bob played the clarinet, Gandhi played the trombone, and David a cornet, and I practiced the piano, and we would each practice at the simultaneously. So she would find, you know, one in the basement, one upstairs, one in the garage, and the piano didn't get moved, so I was in the same place. But at the end of the, so each day we would get, as a team, we would get marks on the chart, and not as individuals. And then at the end of the week, the team that had the best grades, the best score, would get to scrub the kitchen floor and the back porch. We could divide that up. And the poor losers would have to scrub the front porch and sweep the garage. And so we vied for the opportunity, you know, to scrub the kitchen floor. That's why I say she
what a wise woman. What do you think you got from all of this? I mean, what character traits do you have, do you think, that came from that kind of a growing up?
Well, I think caring about other family members, certainly, and enjoying one another. When we were old enough for to be going to college and be home on vacations, and home, we would the four of us would do the dishes after dinner. And in fact, meals at our house in my Frederick birth family were very prolonged. Always, none of this, you know, coming in when you got around to it. With lots of conversation at the table. And so anyway, by the time we finished when we were older and home, we told my mother, don't worry how long we sit at the table. I mean, you're not to touch anything when the meal is over. And then we had this division of labor. Gordon would clear the table. I would scrape and get things organized. And then I would wash the dishes, and Bob and David would dry, and Gandhi would by that time be able to put things away. And we had it down to such a system that no one ever had to say, why aren't you doing this?
Mm-hmm.
And we just did it until it was... But we would sing quartets all the time we were doing the dishes. And we all had pretty good singing voices. In fact, my two older brothers did a lot of performing solo, and we all sang in choral groups, and so that we had fun. So even doing dishes would be fun. It wasn't anything that that mm-hmm. was a chore. And I think there's some carryover in that. I figured with our kids that doing their schoolwork or their political work or their community work were much more important than emptying waste baskets or setting the table. And it never would have occurred to me to drag one of my kids down from homework or studying in order to do some simplistic chore.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, we didn't hand out assignments. We just figured when something needed to be done, whoever had the time to do it ought to see that it needed to be done and do it. And I can remember saying that one time to when Janet, my youngest, was applying for AFS, American Field Service,
mm-hmm.
wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And she did go then to the Netherlands for a year, but this committee of three women came here to see us in our native habitat and to evaluate whether it would be appropriate to send one of our... And they asked me what were Janet's assigned duties around the house. And I said, oh, gee, she doesn't have any, neither does anybody else. And when I tried to explain this system, I think they thought I was making it up. But we had always functioned this way. And sometimes one or another of us, including me and my husband, would be overextended and simply could not do what we thought we were going to or that was expected. And we would send out an SOS and drag in. If I just had mm-hmm. another meeting and wasn't going to have time to finish preparing a meal, I would sound off
uh-huh.
upstairs and say, who can help? I need help. And somebody would come. Or I remember a number of occasions when David would have volunteered to do political addressing envelopes or something at a very young age. And it would get to be a much longer task than he had bargained for.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just I would just sit down and say, here, let me help. And if one of the girls came around, they would, okay, I'll give you half an hour. And I mean, we would see that the job got done. And those were all the kinds of things, I think. Those things and an interest in justice.
Yeah,
and in
yeah.
Caring about other people. Not in a mushy kind of bleeding heart way, but seeing what needed to be done
mm-hmm.
and doing it. When there would be a death in our neighborhood or a fire in the community or something, I never heard my mother say, I wonder what I can do. She would go ahead and do, send clothing or dishes or to a burned out family or have the little ones in a family where there was a death come and stay overnight and
mm-hmm.
just to be in an
mm-hmm.
atmosphere that was a little different for children.
Mm-hmm. It's fascinating. Thinking back to the tasks and the woman from the American Friends Service Committee, did she ultimately ask, well, who does the tasks? And assumed that the task load then fell on you if they...
No, well, I think we illustrated with some of these things
uh-huh.
that kind of put her mind at rest.
Yeah, it's a nice example of equality manifesting itself in the home.
Mm-hmm. And my husband set an example which a lot of men in households do not necessarily set. Now I'm back at the Eaton Ridge household,
uh-huh.
the Clarenbach household, but my husband was a cook and could and did do any kind of domestic chores. He was very neat and he would never throw dirty clothes. I know people who complain about having to pick up
mm-hmm.
dirty clothes from their kids or their spouse, and that was never a problem here. But I also like to organize so that it was made it easier. I wanted children's closets to be accessible and available, mm-hmm. and with sufficient drawer space. And each of our kids had a desk in their room and had whatever equipment, you know, was necessary, so that it was convenient for them and easy to be organized and tidy. And then when they had no examples of disorganized people around, mm-hmm. they just assumed that that's the way you live. And
mm-hmm. Would you like to take a break now?
I could make some coffee.
Okay. Okay, we're back on. You wanted to say more about your mother.
I guess what I wanted to say was that, well, she did a lot of her own things. I know that she wasn't totally happy, that she felt as though she were missing a lot in life. And one of the reasons she encouraged me to do my own, you know, follow my own professional leanings, etc., was again based on her own experience. She also used to tell me more than once, if you wait until you can afford to do something, you'll never do it. So don't be so provident. Now that's advice that I didn't follow as well as I should have. But I'm offering the same advice to my children. And she also said that she felt if she had done more of the things she wanted to do, she probably wouldn't have had arthritis and high blood pressure and other ailments.
She felt that she internalized some of her frustration. Mm-hmm. Is that what she was saying?
Mm. That isn't the way she said it, but
yeah.
Yes, but I'm sure that's what she meant.
Huh.
She also, and my kids love this advice, I pass this along to them, you don't go on a vacation to save money. I used to say, or to lose weight. Now that I need to gain weight, I...
Better go on a vacation.
Yes, right. But those were some of her little pearls and tidbits. But my mother and dad used to take vacations or little trips or do things separately from each other. My mother had trips to both coasts. She would save, for years she would save what she called her cigarette money. When there was a period when all four of us, my three brothers and I, all smoked. And when we'd be home, we would, you know, have someone pick up a carton of cigarettes for each of us. So then my mother would put the equivalent, which in those days was a dollar about for a carton, into her little slush fund, and would save that for her trip.
Mm-hmm.
She
mm-hmm.
belonged to a women's organization called PEO, and she'd go to state conventions for that, and sometimes out to the West Coast. She had a couple of very favorite relatives who lived in San Francisco, and she liked to visit them, and other good friends scattered here and there. So she would go by herself for a couple of weeks. And that, I thought, I know that when, and then she belonged to organizations, so she'd be out evenings going to meetings and things that my dad had no interest in and mm-hmm. didn't go to. And he did a lot of his ministerial and other things by himself and without her. When Hank and I were married 41 years ago, his experience with his parents in Missouri was a totally different thing. I don't think either his mother or father had ever, except his father going to work at the post office, had done anything that they didn't do together. They played pinochle on weekends with friends and went to church. And
mm-hmm.
and so that when I announced that I was going to go to something that Hank wasn't involved in, he was absolutely surprised and kind of shocked at first. Mm-hmm. It took him several weeks to get used to the notion that I was going to go places.
Only weeks, though.
Had nothing to do with him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you did ask me when I was on my way to start the coffee whether my dad ever had emoluments, perks, or
mm-hmm.
honoraria.
Yeah, yeah.
For his, and the answer to that is yes, that...
For preaching or marrying people,
mm-hmm.
or
he never charged, but if anybody offered him 5 or 10 or $2.
Uh-huh.
When I was in high school, I often played the piano or the organ for funerals that my father conducted. We had an old church organ down in our basement, and one that, you know, would pump by foot mm-hmm. and pull out stops, and I could practice on that. And then I had a couple of girlfriends who sang, and we would sing duets of appropriate funeral music. And when he had a funeral out in the country, in somebody's home, and most funerals in those days were conducted, not even in the churches. The real rural ones were in people's homes.
Mm-hmm.
And but so my dad would offer to split his take with the musicians, but more often than not, there was no take to split. And when I had given up a whole, you know, summer afternoon, well, more than that, a little rehearsal time and then going out there and hanging around, I finally made a business arrangement with my father that I would get $2 every time I did it, whether he was paid or not.
Mm.
And he finally agreed. My dad played the piano. Actually, all four of us were somewhat musical. He played an instrument and sang and liked to mm-hmm. sing. And my father was quite musical. My mother, I used to say mercifully, did not offer to sing in any churches, because my mother wasn't a singer and didn't play. In her later years, she started to try to learn to play the piano and used to practice a lot, but it didn't take very well. But my dad could play 3 songs on the piano. Nearer My God to Thee, Rock of Ages, and I can't remember what the third one was, but frequently he'd go to one of his Sunday services and there wasn't a soul in the crowd who could play the organ or the piano, so then he would go over and that's what they would sing that day.
You know, I was thinking about your mother, and did she ever talk to you about what it was like? That she must have been very aware when suffrage was passed in 1920 of the change. Did she ever talk about
No.
the whole political thing and how it affected her?
No, she never did. And my mother died just the year that we had the first statewide Status of Women conference in Wisconsin,
mm-hmm.
1974.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the very month of that conference, which I chaired. And I'm sure had she lived beyond that, that's the things that I was deeply involved in, we would have talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly did talk about them with my father over the years.
Mm-hmm.
My dad used to point out to me, from the time I can remember, when I was certainly in grade school, whenever a woman was doing something of special note or something unusual, he would call that to my attention, or if you read an article. Well, in fact, on our Western trips that year that I was 6 or 5, whatever, we went to Amy Semple McPherson's tabernacle and heard her preach and almost got thrown out. My dad had taken little opera glasses so we could get a better look at her. And an usher came down and told him to put those away. We weren't allowed to do that. But and we saw the aviator. You know.
Yes, I do know.
Who was lost in the Pacific.
Yes. If the name will come to us.
Yes. And he used to, I can remember articles on
Amelia Earhart.
Amelia Earhart, right. We actually saw her.
Hmm.
And articles about Catherine Lenroot, who was head of the children's fund or department or something
mm-hmm.
in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
So he was always pointing out those things.
Mm-hmm.
And
my
mother had 2 friends right in Sparta who published books, who wrote and published books, and so women of achievement of at any level were their friends and people that we met and talked with. And
Yeah, so you grew up with role models or knowledge of role models. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And had some wonderful teachers all through my grade in high school, women teachers, as well as a few men mm-hmm. teachers. But,
mm-hmm. but you recall the women teachers, they stand
out. Oh, yeah. You are reminding me of another wonderful institution in our Frederick household. Because my mother had been a teacher, and because she remembered how lonely those early weeks would be, she started, well, from the time my brother Bob started school, she would always invite his teacher or teachers to come for dinner at our house. And then, by the time there were four of us in school, to invite each of our teachers, plus the one we had last year, plus the music teacher and the gym teacher, it finally reached the point where she just invited all of the teachers.
Oh.
And we had, and our house wasn't really big enough, big as it was, so that they finally rented a place. It was kind of a cabin. There was a lodge with a precursor of motels, really,
uh-huh.
out on the outskirts of town, and made arrangements to rent that place and have them, in fact, prepare a meal. Then we always had all kinds of games, and sometimes at our house, but we played, I remember something called coffee pot, which was kind of like charades,
mm-hmm.
and cootie, and, you know, card game, not games of various kinds. Anyway, we would have just an hilarious evening, and it was a couple of the teachers I can remember speaking to me, wanting to be sure that even though we had acted foolish at home, that I wasn't to carry this over into the classroom. Well, I already knew that. I didn't need to be coached. And yet, they were unaccustomed to, you know, having fun and letting their hair down in front of their students.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that became such an institution that a couple of years, I can remember, my mother hadn't given it a thought, and she'd get a phone call from some of the teachers saying, when are you having your party? Because we want to be sure to save the date. And that would then goad her into doing it.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of fun. And then over the year, if there were teachers that we specially liked, we would have them for Sunday dinner. And that was something that we have done a little bit of as parents, too,
mm-hmm.
to get to know the kids' teachers personally. And
Yeah. Bridging that gap between your personal life and education, too, that must have made it easier for you to go on also, mm-hmm. somehow, that it isn't a mysterious thing.
That's right.
Yeah. What about religion? I mean, we've talked about your dad being a mm-hmm. preacher, mm-hmm. a parson. How did you feel about it? Did you consider yourself a religious person? And
I certainly was a Sunday go to meeting person. For a variety of reasons, my brothers and I went to Sunday school, not in the local Methodist church, but in the Congregational church, which was a block closer to our house. My mother had grown up in that Congregational church. But I think the real reason that we opted to go there, and more of our friends went there than to the Methodist church. There were other churches mm-hmm. in town as well.
And the Methodist church was where your father was.
My father was a Methodist minister, but he did not service the Sparta Methodist church.
Oh, I see.
And I think there was always a little bit of competitive tension between whoever was occupying that pulpit and my dad. Now, my dad stayed, you know, for 50 years doing those country churches. He would go to conference every year. I don't know if you know how the Methodist Church functions, but the bishop and the district superintendent assign ministers to parishes, and they don't always have an option. And so my dad would make a joke every year. Gee, you wonder if he's going to get Big Creek and Rockland back again, or if somebody else is going to be assigned there, because no one else would take it on a bet.
Mm-hmm.
And the churches did just kind of wither away after he stopped mm-hmm. preaching. But the incumbent in the local Sparta church would be changed from time to time, maybe
4 or 5 years or whatever. That's just the mm-hmm. practice, I guess, mm-hmm. in the Methodist Church. Mm-hmm. And so with my father getting all of the many weddings, funerals, baptisms, etc., often of people who went to the local church but who knew him and liked him and wanted him, or he might have married their parents or their brother and sister, so they wanted him also. And whether there really was rivalry or whether my father suspected there might be, or maybe he didn't want his kids blabbing all of the family skeletons, I don't know. But there was never any objection. So I went to Sunday school, which I continued to do all the way through high school. Mm-hmm. We had a marvelous woman who moved to town when her husband died, and whose family had lived there for a long time, who made our Sunday school class was really a social science course more than anything else, so that this same gang of otherwise reasonably sophisticated, we were segregated by males and females, and so these were gals, and just wouldn't have missed, and would prepare and think through what we were going to do. Then I went to a Sunday evening a young people's thing. I sang in the choir. I ushered. That was kind of unusual, too, when we were in high school. The summertime head usher was the father of one of my friends, and so for 1 month he would have girls usher and pass the collection plate. And,
how did you feel about that when you did it?
We thought it was great.
Had really didn't think of it as a revolution.